Take a break from your busy schedule and join Harold Saleh for Guidelines, a 5-minute commentary on living.
Question: why does the guilty one seem to get away with wrongdoing? Ever ask yourself that? There are times when it appears that the real winner is the liar, the cheat, the scoundrel, at least at the onset. Take, for example, the woman who asked the penetrating question about the betrayal of her husband. She wrote, "Why isn't he suffering? Why is he getting away without any pain? He sinned. He caused the pain and suffering. I'm the one who's walking through the fire. I'm the one carrying the scars from the burns." Long ago, the psalmist affirmed, "Only with thine eyes shall thou behold and see the reward of the wicked." What appears to be their reward, though, is short-lived. David was also troubled by the issue of the bad guy seeming to win. In Psalm 37, he talks at length about the wicked. 14 times he alludes to them in one way or another. How they take advantage of the poor, how they seem to amass wealth, how they appear to get ahead of the person with integrity and honor. Yet, says David, their gain is short-lived. They die and face judgment, while the righteous not only lie down at night with a clear conscience, but will have peace and inherit the land. "Better the little that the righteous have," said David, "than the wealth of many wicked." Does the individual who does wrong really get away with no apparent pain or grief? Say, for example, the man who walks out on his wife and children for a younger woman. "What I've always wanted," he boasts. He rejects the tears and pleas of his wife and children not to leave. Sometimes it looks like he gets away with it. Short-term gains with long-term consequences, however, eventually crumble and decay. Okay, then, why does God allow sinful men to take advantage of their families? Why doesn't he just stop them from doing this? That's the old question of, why does God allow evil in the world? Why didn't God keep Adam and Eve from taking the forbidden fruit? The simple but not completely satisfying answer is because he made us in his image, giving us a will to choose right or wrong, and thus making our love for him and our choices for right and good meaningful. Suppose you were the only woman alive on a deserted island. Then one day a raft bearing a lonely sailor drifted up on the beach. The sailor walked with you on the sand, looked at the sunset, then declared you to be the most wonderful, the most beautiful woman in all the world. How impressed would you be? God gave you a choice. Do right or do wrong. Choose good or evil. But he taught us that with every choice come consequences. And though at the end of the day the gavel may not be slammed down on evil, there comes the eventual judgment of God when the dead, small and great, stand before him and they are judged according to their deeds. Pain and heartache take your mind from the whole and focuses on only the immediate loss, much like a toothache that hurts, but isn't as serious as if you had chest pain signaling a heart attack. Forgiving the person who has wronged you takes you beyond the pain and helps you to find healing. To forgive isn't saying, "What you did is okay." Rather, it is saying, "I put the wrong you have done in God's hands. He can deal with you. I'm getting on with my life." When you do that, whether or not the person who wronged you is getting off without punishment, it pales. And he is far more capable of meting out judgment and justice than we are. Remember, God does have his payday someday. Sometimes we kid ourselves, we bemuse ourselves thinking, "God is so far distant and so far removed, he doesn't know what I'm doing." Ultimately, though, you face the judge. And that's when you can be sure God's wrath will be fulfilled. I'm Harold Saleh. You've just heard Guidelines. You can download what you've heard by going to the homepage on our web at guidelines.org.